නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear Dhamma friends, as you all can remember, we were discussing Mahasunyata Sutta, or the Greater Discourse on Voidness. So, this discourse as well as the previous discourse are mainly discussing about the voidness or the sunyata, and which we can say is one of the very great teaching of the Buddha, and particularly some practical aspects are there how one can achieve some higher attainments of the vipassana knowledges, and how one may develop using that. And such kind of aspects are being developed or discussed in these suttas. And if I recall some aspects of the previous two discussions, which I have already conducted on Greater Discourse on Voidness, on one occasion Buddha was living at Kapilavattu at Nigrodha's park, and there he understood there were many monks dwelling at Kalakhemaka, the Sakyan's garden. So at that time Buddha have noticed that, but he didn't really appreciate that. He asked from Venerable Ananda why so many monks were gathered here. Then Venerable Ananda explained that this is the robe season, and we are receiving so many robes from lay devotees, and now monks are get together and they are preparing robes. As a result of that, there are so many dwelling places were prepared at this Sakyan's garden called Kalakhemaka, and that is the situation. And then Buddha actually discouraged that. So probably we might expect that when a teacher has so many followers, so many students, he may feel happy. So basically Buddha mentioned that if one willing to have some seclusion, if one willing to basically enjoy the fruits of the monkhood or the seclusion or the this no actually it is from my side. There's a what you call a speaker, this recorder connector, it's sometimes giving some trouble, so I hope now things are all right. Yeah. We'll see how long I can carry on. Yeah. So then actually Buddha mentioned about that the samatha side as well as the vipassana side. So if one wants to have some tranquility in the by means of the samatha practices, that also require a fair amount of seclusion. And on the other hand, if one wants to have complete deliverance, complete say path and fruition, so that also requires this kind of practice. So this, therefore, we can understand it is not merely for the higher spiritual gains that one may take as supramundane insights, but even if one wants to have mundane type of insights, mundane type of seclusion, or mundane type of blissful experiences, even that requires a fair amount of secluded practice. Now, therefore, we can understand this sutta is fairly oriented towards secluded practice, oriented towards some sort of a seclusion, dispassion, which has to be arisen in the mind. So it is therefore not that something socializing and sort of day-to-day activities and giving dana and that sort of activities are encouraged. Here mostly the higher practice is encouraged. And Buddha mentioned that he has discovered a kind of an abiding which is completely free from signs. What he mentioned here is the signless. That is the Animitta Samadhi. Now, typically, if we consider our minds, so our minds are occupied with so many signs, so many perceptions, so many marks, which we have already seen, already heard, already cognized. And on the other hand, we have so much of present moment signs, marks, perceptions. At the same time, we may have a lot of projected signs, marks, perceptions. So basically, our minds are so much, we can say, crowded, complicated, and filled with so much of signs. But Buddha has mentioned here that he has found something different. So that is the complete freedom of these signs. So keeping the mind empty, keeping the mind free from those kind of signs, keeping the mind completely pure, very refined, quite simple, quite lucid. So this is something that Buddha has understood and has sort of dwelling. He himself is dwelling in the same thing. So therefore he mentioned that sometimes he intend to dwell in that signless concentration. On that occasion, there may be certain others trying to come and interrupt him. They may be kings, they may be peasants, they may be, say, devotees, they may be monks, nuns. But at that time, Buddha doesn't encourage that company. Rather, he make a kind of a discussion, make a note, so that they may be dismissed as quickly as possible. So that he is able to enjoy that seclusion. He is able to enjoy that signless concentration. So you can see, after being the Buddha, it is not that he throughout the day in sort of doing this and that, being maintaining a very busy life. Rather, time to time he has gone for seclusion. He spent time in seclusion. He has given a very good example to his followers. So this is the path. Seclusion requires certain emphasis. So he, being an example for that, he mentioned here that if someone is coming at on such occasion to meet him, he simply make a very short discussion so that the person may get dismissed. And similarly, Buddha mentioned if one monk also wish to have that sort of what you call internal voidness, internally serene, internally peaceful, maintaining inner silence, then he too has to follow the same path. Now if someone wants to come and meet him, so he, rather than enjoying it or encouraging it, he may have to dismiss so that he may have time for his own seclusion. And further, Buddha mentioned here, starting with certain practical aspects, now one has to steady one's mind and quietens it, brings to singleness. Now, typically our minds are quite distracted, jump into the past, jump into the future, and always getting scattered. But now, using the samatha practice, probably one can make one's mind somewhat steady. So that is being mentioned as the next step. So the user may attain, or the practitioner may attain first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. So using that, one is able to steady one's mind and then quietens one's mind and internally composed in one's mind. So this is one way that one is somewhat restraining one's mind using the samatha practice. And then, now Buddha explains step by step, very practically, how one may slowly expand these skills. So, at the beginning, he simply has some samatha tranquility, samatha-oriented tranquility, calmness. But now, he is explaining about the voidness, sunyata, where, or the emptiness, how one has to dwell in emptiness. So probably you can remember in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, Buddha explained that this is this can be developed to the utmost level, kind of a supreme, supramundane level. And it can be used even to eradicate taints, asava. So one can eradicate asavas, taints, using the voidness or the signless concentration. So therefore these are very interesting and very useful important practices in the Buddha's teaching. Now, suppose there is one monk, he is trying to achieve whiteness using certain internal phenomena. It's very much like, suppose he is practicing Vedananupassana, so that he is able to maintain his attention to various feelings, and those various feelings now he is able to observe. At the beginning those may not be clear, but later as a result of continuous practice he is able to experience different types of feelings. There may be pleasurable feelings, there may be painful feelings, and there may be equanimous feelings. Now again and again when he is observing them, so he is developing fair amount of mindfulness, fair amount of clear comprehension, and fair amount of wisdom. And as he improves, he probably may understand, okay, these are not single feelings, they are kind of group of feelings, manifest as a single feeling. But when the mind's resolution improves, clear comprehension improves, he is able to recognize these subtle aspects. So he may understand, okay, there are many or group of minute feelings all together act as a single feeling. Now as he improves further, so he may understand each minute feeling quickly arises and passes away. So as a result of that, he is gaining a lot of wisdom by seeing this quick arising and passing away. So this is how slowly various insights are arising. So as a result of that, he is gaining fair amount of understanding about the impermanence. And when things are impermanent and always oppressed by this kind of impermanent nature, inconstant nature, he may understand, okay, this is quite unsatisfactory. We can't have lasting happiness using this kind of a process. This is so vulnerable. It is completely oppressed by arising and passing away. So therefore he may understand it is quite unsatisfactory, quite suffering. And how there can be a person, how there can be a soul, an everlasting entity in this kind of a process, then he may understand the non-self. So likewise, these insights actually gradually develops, and as a result of that, there is a dispassion going to arise in one's mind. So this is a kind of a causal reaction happens. So as one develops fair amount of understanding, wisdom, that leads to dispassion. That leads to disenchantment. And that leads to some sort of letting go. So if this happens properly, so that means he is able to achieve emptiness, achieve signlessness, signless concentration. But here, Buddha very beautifully mentioned, even though he tried, he failed. He couldn't achieve it. So this is not difficult to understand, because sometimes even though we try, we can't reach the fruit, we can't reach the result. In between we may get interrupted, or we have so much of distractions, had a lot of arguments at the office, so had a hard day, there are so many thoughts available in the mind, or there are sort of disturbance happening during the sitting session. So likewise there are many disturbances or obstacles that we may go through. As a result of that, we couldn't achieve emptiness. So this is very practically Buddha explained. And similarly he mentioned that he sometimes try to achieve emptiness using external phenomena. Say he is able to recognize certain sounds that may be again and again repeated, and he is observing that as a way of improving his wisdom and trying to achieve emptiness using that. But here also he is not succeeding. He is not successful. And he tries both. Internally he is keeping some attention and trying to understand and develop fair amount of wisdom. Externally also he is keeping his attention to some external phenomena and trying to develop wisdom. But still couldn't achieve emptiness. And then Buddha mentioned that he may be trying to develop imperturbability. So that is the very much higher concentration, tranquility practice. We can roughly say that is the first or second levels of the arupa jhana, immaterial concentrations. So he is trying to achieve such. There also he fails. So you can see the practices always has these kinds of ups and downs, success and failures. So these successes and failures actually help us to develop fair amount of stability in the mind. So if we are constantly being successful, then we never have that kind of tolerance, that kind of endurance, patience in our minds. But when we fail, when we sometimes get failed, so that helps to understand the nature. That helps to understand even deeply about the certain characteristics of our life, universal characteristics, how impermanent things are, how unsatisfactory things are, and how non-governable things are. So therefore, these successes and failures are going together. So they are kind of part and parcel of the whole thing. So they happens in the spiritual life as well. And when the monks fail, either internally, externally, or internally, externally, both, or even when he is trying to achieve imperturbability, when he fails, so what he has to do? Again, he has to practice. Again, he has to refine his faculties, improve the faculties, improve the enlightenment factors, improve concentration. So whatever the spiritual aspects, qualities that we need to develop, he has to further continue in developing. And now, Buddha is talking about the success side. Now, after he is steadying his tranquility further, calmness further, and then wisdom further, he again now try using internal phenomena. Now suppose he is using say elements characteristics. Various elements are there. He is able to keep his attention on various elements. He recognizes elements, how they manifest, how they develop, how they pass away. So likewise, he is gaining some amount of wisdom. And at a given time, probably, when his understanding comes to a certain reach, certain threshold, his mind get released, or his mind get freed from all these phenomena, indicating that he was able to achieve emptiness. It may be temporary. So this is not something kind of a everlasting kind of an emptiness. This is a kind of a conditioned or impermanent type of emptiness. So that is why it is mentioned is a temporary freedom. Samayikang vimutting, temporary freedom. It is not a lasting or everlasting freedom, but what the practitioner achieves first is a temporary freedom. He has prepared fair amount of wisdom. He has constructed fair amount of, say, concentration. So those conducive factors are available. As a result of that, he is able to have a temporary freedom. And similarly, Buddha mentioned he is successful in doing that using external phenomena. He is successful in using that internal and external both phenomena. And then he is able to even maintain some amount of imperturbability in the mind. So likewise, now Buddha mentioned about the successful side as well. Now, and when he is there, another important thing that we can recognize here is whenever he is there, either in the emptiness or either in the imperturbability, emptiness achieved using internal characteristics or internal phenomena, emptiness achieved through external phenomena, whatever the way, when he is dwelling there, when he has reached there, he clearly knows that. So this is a very interesting point. In this way, he has full awareness of that. So he has full awareness of that. So as we develop, so this full awareness has to be available. Because sometimes when we have too much concentration, sometimes mind latch on to some sort of an unknown area where you are very much like sleeping or unconscious and you don't know what has happened. Actually, that has to be developed to a level where you know what exactly happens. So that is why here, in this way, he has full awareness of what has happened. He may be in the signless concentration, he know about it. He may be in the desireless concentration, he knows about it. He may be in the emptiness, he knows about it. So therefore, knowing is there. It is not kind of an unknowing thing. Knowing is there. He is aware of it. He is mindful about it. And now, Buddha further explains practically how one may enhance these skills. Now, assume that he is practicing while sitting, but now he feels like, I better walk. Now I better go for a walking. I better go for walking meditation, walking practice. And he makes a kind of a determination. While walking, no evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief will beset me. So you can see the inclination in his mind, kind of a pure intention he has in his mind. So all these practices are intended to purify one's mind. Our minds are interrupted with so much of different kinds of defilements, and these Buddha's teachings helps us to purify our minds. So therefore that intention is also highlighted here. Now he wants to go for a walk, and when he is starting walk, he has a very innocent determination. During this walking practice, may these different types of defilements intrude my mind. May not invade my mind, not interrupt my mind. So that kind of a intention is there. So while doing that, now Buddha mentioned he is able to achieve emptiness, sometimes fail, even achieving emptiness. While walking, he is trying to achieve emptiness, but sometimes he is successful, sometimes not. And then Buddha mentioned while standing, while lying down. So all the postures are mentioned. So while going through different postures, now he is developing this emptiness. Now he wants to dwell in emptiness. That is the important thing that we need to understand. So he is trying to dwell in emptiness. So that is why all these different postures are mentioned. While sitting, he likes to be there. He likes to maintain emptiness. While standing, he likes to maintain emptiness. While lying down, he likes to maintain emptiness. While sitting, he likes to maintain emptiness. So likewise, he is spreading the skill of emptiness, skill of dwelling in emptiness to everywhere. Now, as he is continuing his day's life, day's abiding, Buddha mentioned that his mind inclines on talking. So you can see, now he wants to talk. That's a natural intention. Now he wants to talk. But he make a kind of a resolve that he know, if I engage with unnecessary talking, useless talking, or what we call as idle chattering, then it is going to be detrimental to my practice. So there are different types of talking, different types of subjects. So it is mentioned, talks about kings, robbers, ministers, armies, dangers, battles, food, drink, clothing, beds, garlands, perfumes, relatives, vehicles, villages, towns, cities, countries, women, heroes, streets, wells, the dead, trivialities, the origin of the world, the origin of the sea, whether things are so or are not so, such talk I shall not utter. Now you can see a long list is there. Actually, what we talk is always in this list. So in a way it is very difficult, because whenever we are talking on any of these subjects. We may be talking about politics, we may be talking about the president, we may be talking about the, say, price of the goods, we may be talking about the fuel price, or we may be talking about the invasions, how Russia is now trying to invade Ukraine. So different things. So you can see our minds are so much engaged with these kind of mundane kind of topics. So more we use our mind to think about this and to talk about this, our mind gets occupied. More and more our mind get occupied with these kind of mundane, trivial things. So Buddha mentioned here, so these are low. These kinds of talks, discussions are low. They are vulgar, they are coarse, ignoble, unbeneficial, and which does not lead to disenchantment, does not lead to dispassion, does not lead to cessation, does not lead to peace, does not lead to direct knowledge, and does not lead to enlightenment. But there are other talks which are dealing with the effacement and favors the mind's release and encourages the mind, encourages the enlightenment, encourages dispassion, cessation, peace, direct knowledge, Nibbana. So there are such talks as well. And there are 10 types Buddha mentioned. And that is talks on wanting little, being frugal, wanting little, apichata, and contentment, santuttita. So you have something and you are happy about it. You are contented. And seclusion. So maintaining the seclusion. It may be the mental seclusion, mind seclusion, chitta viveka. Time to time may be the bodily seclusion, kaya viveka. And using which actually both we are trying to achieve the freedom from defilements. So that is the upadhi viveka, seclusion. Aloofness from society. So maintaining your privacy, maintaining kind of secluded practice, seclusion in yourself. Arousing energy, virtue, that is about the sila, concentration, samadhi, wisdom, panya, deliverance, vimutti, knowledge and vision of deliverance, vimutti jnana dasana, how one achieves this kind of deliverance. Such talk I shall utter. So if I want to talk, I better talk on these subjects. So you can see how much Buddha sort of direct ourselves onto these subjects. Appiccha kata, santutti kata, paviveka kata, asansanga kata, viriyarambha kata, sila kata, samadhi kata, panya kata, vimutti kata, vimutti jnana dasana kata. Now these are the 10 subjects Buddha encourages. Now probably you might get disheartened that you being the lay people, how can we always discuss on these? We have a lot of family problems. I have to go to the supermarket. I have to go to the voting place. I have to go to get my vaccination. I have to go to my working place. So many things are there. But the thing is, we have to restrain ourselves. So time to time we may have to engage with this kind of talks. But the interruption that we go through because of this talking, somehow we have to recover, or somehow we have to address. Suppose you are going to work and you have to do a lot of talking while conducting your job, and it disturbs your mind. And once you return home, so you have to heal your mind. You have to go for a walk, you have to go for a sitting session, you have to go for the garden and go to the garden and sort of calm down your mind, release the tensions. So likewise, you have to heal the mind. So it is not that we are completely deprived from all the activities and trying to lead a kind of an ascetic life. We may have a lot of obligations, we may have a lot of duties, so we have to do various things. But when we are doing those things, once we get a time, so we need to remember our practice, we need to come back to our practice, we need to continue our practice. So if there are any disturbances available in the mind because of day's activities. So we have to heal the mind. Again we have to find seclusion. Again we have to calm down. So likewise, it's a kind of a process. It's a kind of an entirely a pragmatic process. And now that is about talking. And now Buddha explained that his mind inclines on thinking. Now previously his mind he want to sit, then he want to walk, he want to lie down, he want to stand, then he want to talk, and now he want to think. Now this is very practical things that we all go through. It is not that throughout the day that we can sit or we can walk. There are situations that we have to talk, and there are situations that we have to think. Now here Buddha mentioned when he has to think, again he has kind of a resolve. Again he has some sort of a reflection whether what I am going to think is helpful or harmful. Now there are certain thoughts which are low, vulgar, coarse, ignoble, unbeneficial, do not lead to disenchantment, do not lead to dispassion, do not lead to cessation, do not lead to peace, do not lead to direct knowledge or enlightenment. And such kind of thoughts I may not encourage. Those are the sensual desires, thoughts of ill will, thoughts of cruelty. That is kama vitakka, vyapada vitakka, vihinsa vitakka. So those kinds of three gross defilements one should not encourage. Thinking is all right, but thinking these kinds of thoughts, thinking too much about sensuality, thinking too much about ill will and cruelty, so those are quite harmful to the oneself. Therefore Buddha mentioned, so one should not think in that line. On the other hand, thoughts are noble and emancipating, lead one to dispassion, free from suffering. And so those thoughts are better to think. So those are the thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of non-ill will, and thoughts of non-cruelty. So those are the, we can say, the wholesome thoughts. So those are not harmful. So one can think those kinds of thoughts. So the thinking he is now little refining. He is not allowing his mind to think whatever it likes. Rather he do some sort of a restrainment on what he is thinking. And then I think we can't conclude today. Yeah. So basically Buddha mentioned here, so those kind of thinking that one has to refine, one has to resolve what the mind is going to think. So you are not now being driven by thinking, rather you do little bit of adjustments in what you are thinking. Typically mind tends to think about sensual thoughts, mind tends to think about cruelty, mind tends to think about ill will, thoughts of ill will. But once you notice that, you have to slowly restrain the mind. Because our minds are so used to do that. So that is our habit. Thinking about various sensual thoughts is a kind of a habit what we have developed for a long, long time. And thinking about cruelty, harming another person, is kind of a habit. And thoughts of ill will, kind of a habit. So once we notice that, rather than encouraging that, now we need to restrain the mind. Now we need to restrain thinking. Are we able to keep our mind quiet rather than thinking these kinds of thoughts? So these are very practical aspects. So you have to be mindful on what mind is thinking. So at that time, if you know mind is going to think about something harmful, so at that time you have to interrupt. You have to stop. You have to calm down. You have to let go of those thoughts rather than encouraging them. And now Buddha talks about another reflection. So that is about the sensual desires in a way, more detailed level. So there are what we call as one has to review one's mind on certain aspects. If there is, now there are five types of cords of sensual pleasure, panchakama. So there are some desirable sights, desirable sounds, desirable smells, odors, desirable tastes, desirable tactile sensations. Now these are the typical panchakama, five types of sensual cords. Cords of sensual pleasure. So there are very beautiful forms, beautiful sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile sensations. Now, Buddha mentioned, and these actually, whenever our minds are engaged with these kinds of objects, our mind get attracted to that. Mind get polluted by them. Mind get colored by them. And further, mind gets minds are provocative of lust. Because such inherent qualities are available in the mind. So what we call as kamasava. Kamasava, the taint of sensuality, is available in our minds. So once we encounter beautiful, say, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile sensations, so that sensuality being provocated or being triggered. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, one has to reflect time to time in one's mind, is my mind get excited by any of these? At the moment, is my mind associating any of these? Or is my mind being excited because of any of these five chords of sensual desires? And it's a kind of an honest reflection. So he is verifying, he is checking his mind. He is sort of sensing his mind. He is reflecting his mind. He is reviewing his mind. Checking whether his mind is associating any of these. Or his mind being excited because of these. And if he finds, yes, my mind is now associating some sort of say thoughts related to the kind of a sight, then he recognizes my mind is excited because of these kind of sensual thoughts. So there are desires, lust available in the mind. Desire and lust for the five chords of sensual pleasure are unabandoned in me. My mind is occupied with them. Still my mind hasn't abandoned them. Still it is associating them. It is still trying to get excited, trying to find pleasure because of these. Now, time to time, therefore, Buddha mentioned that one has to do such reflections. Now he is honestly reflecting his own mind. Step back and looking at his mind. Now I think this is enough for today, because the other part is more somewhat deep, talking about further eradicating of taints. So you can see slowly Buddha explains many different aspects of our practice. So these are in a way highly spiritual. So you don't need to get really discouraged thinking I can't do this, I have so many things, I am just a layperson, how I am going to do this? All these things are very much too oriented towards monks, monastics. How am I going to do this? So you don't need to get discouraged like that. So to your level, you can try. So there are occasions that you may find seclusion, and at that time you can try. To your level, you can find what are the times I have, say, some proper talking, discussions. Let me discuss something about the practice, rather than discuss about politics. Let me discuss something useful. So if you have some, say, relaxed time, let me, rather than watching movie, let me do some practice, let me walk, try to keep my mind empty. So likewise, we need to find out how we can incorporate these teachings to our practice, these teachings to our life. So either you may be a layperson, either you may be a monk, it doesn't matter. So either lay or monk, we have to develop these aspects as much as possible. So that is the point. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Actually, there are some more things to discuss. I hope we can discuss further, some further aspects next week. And now I like to open the session for questions.
Hello friends, if we have anyone joining us for the very first time, you can participate in the Q&A by either raising your hands or you can submit your questions in the chat. So Bente, I have a question. You mentioned about sometimes our feelings, even in the moment, there are so many feelings all at once, right, making up the moment at that time. From my experience, it seems like sometimes is it possible that it's a mix of both mental and the physical element objects all at once? Or in a moment, can it only be either the mind or only the body? Does that question make sense?
I didn't really get it, Jennifer. So what you are trying to tell is, so when the mind is empty, you still feel some sort of bodily sensations? Is that what you are referring?
Not when the mind is empty. Actually, quite the opposite, where in a moment, the mind is filled with, objects, right? Mm-hmm. But those objects seems to be a mixture of, mental objects as well as like physical objects in terms of like the, elements.
Right.
Is that possible that it could be a mix of both?
Can, definitely. Now the thing is now like this. Now even it can happen in the practice as we continue. Now suppose at the very early stages, due to lack of mindfulness, we are not aware of any of these. But as we improve our mindfulness, then we are able to recognize something most prominent. Say you are walking, and while walking you are able to recognize hardness of the floor. So that is that we are using to establish mindfulness. Now as we further continue, so this hardness become more prominent, more evident, and we are able to recognize even subtle aspects of hardness. And as we continue our practice further, not only hardness, there may be smoothness, roughness, softness, heaviness, lightness. So likewise, more and more information going to be available. Now as we further continue, there is a situation, now everything going to change, now everything become mixed. Now you can't distinguish whether it is hardness or softness or roughness or smoothness. So likewise, you can't distinguish. There is something, some sort of a feeling is there, but you can't distinguish. And it is a kind of a mixture. So it is not only these kind of physical characteristics. There may be even sounds. There may be sights. There may be, say, thoughts. Everything has become very much like mixture. It's very much like a flux. So therefore, as we continue our practice at a given moment, so this sort of mixing or kind of what to say, kind of a mixture can be available, flux can be available. So that flux actually help us to develop fair amount of dispassion, because now you can't see the proper boundaries, now you can't see the proper lines, marks, shapes, colors, etc., because everything has become completely mixed up. So therefore it is possible.
Thank you very much. I have a couple of questions, Bhante. Why is the Buddha advocating us to keep our minds empty? Is it because when we have our minds occupied with something, good or bad, it's always creating karma? Or what is the purpose?
Yeah. Now, on the opposite, why you need to occupy your mind?
That is true, but that's the nature of the mind, right?
Now, so basically, the point is, now we like to keep our minds occupied. So that is a kind of a internal trend we have. So we like to proliferate. We like to go continue our minds, engage with so many things. We like to engage with certain regretful things, worrying, going through certain uncertainties, daydreaming, fantasizing. So these are all unhealthy trends we have in our mind. So that is something we need to understand. So our minds are used to very unhealthy kinds of mental patterns. We are unknowingly encouraging them. We are constantly occupying our minds with these kind of unhealthy patterns, and ultimately we are going to suffer. Now with the practice we are able to recognize these unhealthy mental patterns, certain habitual tendencies we have. And now slowly we are now trying to very much like dismantle, very much like disentangle this whole situation, so that mind become lucid, mind become very clean, very clear. You are able to recognize how we are unnecessarily constructing thoughts, how we are coloring our thoughts, how we are unnecessarily occupying our minds, how we are making it quite kind of depressive purposely. So when we do that, then we understand that, then we are sort of making kind of a paradigm shift. How about maintaining inner silence?
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. In other words, if we don't do this, we are always creating karma.
Exactly. Not only karma.
Yeah.
Not only karma. Yeah. We are accumulating karma. We are sort of going through a lot of suffering, mentally we are suffering, and we can end up with sort of stress, end up with being mentally sick, and likewise so many things are there.
But I have another question not related to this, is it okay?
Sure.
But dumb question, when we are meditating, and if we get a thought that is, you know, extraneous thought.
Mm-hmm.
Are we supposed to just, observe it until it goes away? We were having a discussion, some of my friends, we have sometimes a discussion on our practice. They were suggesting that we should be just observing the thought until it goes away. Is that what you should supposed to do, or get back to your object of meditation?
No, actually, getting back to your object of meditation is the early practice, where you are not yet confident about handling or confronting the thought. So at that time, we know that I am not yet capable of handling these thoughts. My mindfulness is very weak. I am very new to practice. So if I confront these thoughts, I am going to get defeated. So I will get absorbed to this thinking. I start to support this thinking. So at that time, better you take your mind back to the meditation object. But on the other hand, as you continue a practice, you are now slowly developing fair amount of mindfulness, clear comprehension. At that time, you don't need to come back to the meditation object. So at that time, you can be with the thought, you can observe thoughts, how mind, what mind is doing, because you are in a way confident and you already have fair amount of mindfulness and clear comprehension. So that is the only way to, in a way, the weaken these defilements. So we need to know, we need to know these defilements, and we need to see these defilements. Then we have to allow them to slowly fade away rather than encouraging them.
Another question, Bhante, is in our discussion, it was said that these thoughts are not yours. I mean, in the say, possessively, it's not yours. That
correct.
I agree.
Correct,
but
correct.
Can you please explain to me if it is, if I'm experiencing it, how else can you describe those thoughts? Of course, they are not mine, because we are trying to get rid of the sense of self. But if the thoughts come to you, how would you explain it?
Yeah, I mean, due to various reasons, thoughts can come. Now, say for example, now assume that you are driving a vehicle and your eyes are open. Now, there are so many other vehicles also passing by, and there are many shops, many gardens, many houses, many pedestrians, and everything are available. So that is the typical nature. So now, but you are not interested of any of those. So you simply pass by, and you are simply trying to reach your, say, destination. So for the eyes, so all these different sights are external phenomena, and you are not interested. So similarly, we can recognize our internal life also. Different thoughts are there. Those may be completely irrelevant thoughts, kind of dreams, kind of projections, sort of certain habits, certain inner tendencies, maybe some daily activities, maybe some what you have seen in the internet, what you have seen in the television. So all these different kinds of things may trigger some sort of internal conflict, some sort of internal say thoughts, we can say. So we don't need to consider them as mine or myself, and we don't need to give any relevance or importance to them, and we can discard them. But time to time there may be useful thoughts, so we can give due respect to them if they are beneficial. So that is so likewise, so we are being aware of the mind. We are being aware what mind is thinking, what are the thoughts going on, and most of the time those are not relevant, and those are not useful, and we can simply discard.
Bhante, one thing, elaborating on thoughts, now supposing you get a thought that is anger, thought of anger or something like that, something that has, you know, affected you or what somebody has said.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that you just sort of say anger, or and then just let it be, or what? There's the Mahasisaya method that says to label it and just let it go. How do you do it?
Yeah.
How would you recommend it?
No, actually many methods are there. Not just a single method. There are many methods available. So as you mentioned, you can label it. So labeling is one way. Labeling is one way, because you know at that time anger is present. Because when you are looking at anger as anger, it is no more your anger. It is anger.
Right.
So you are looking at it objectively. You are looking at it objectively. As a result of that, there's a kind of a separation happens. So you are aware of the presence of anger. Then you are not a victim of anger. Then it starts to fade away. So this is one approach. And the other thing is that you can recognize, I mean, when mind has become angry, you may understand what a suffering you are sort of going through. So you understand the gross suffering, hard nature available in the mind. Previously your mind is very soft, calm, serene, but now it is burning. So why not come back to the previous stage? So you are giving some sort of a direction to the mind. So don't encourage this kind of suffering nature, burden nature in the mind. Let's return back to the simplicity. Let's return back to that calm nature, calm state. So that is another approach. So likewise, you can understand how you unnecessarily add things, how you have constructed things. So you are the ones made the mind angry. So they are, assume that you have seen someone and you were after seeing him or her, so you pulled so much of previous memories into the picture and you have projected to the present situation, and now you have colored it, you presume that he is a bad person, he is my enemy. So now you are angry. So likewise, I mean, there are so much that we do, purposely we do in order to make our minds angry. So if more and more we understand that, we are trying not to do it. So we are trying to keep the mind silent. He may be a bad person, doesn't matter. But let me keep my mind quiet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Just want to know how to handle those things.
Yeah. I mean, you have to try various methods. It is not a single method available. You can try different methods.
Thank you, Bhante. I'll give it to you.
Okay.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Bhante. Bhante, my question is actually not regarding the Dhamma talk today, but it's more of a general social matter. Will that be okay to ask?
Sure.
Yeah. Bhante, you know, in today's world, people talk about option for terminally ill people to end their life with assistance, like euthanasia. From the general perspective, they are like in pain, so it seems okay to have that option. It's not that I'm not considering this option, but I just like to find out a bit more. Bhante, that however, from the Buddhist perspective, I would like to understand like what is our what is the Buddhist kind of teaching on this, because I have seen some sutta like I think Channo or the sutta, where some of the rahat monks but still in like unbearable pain ended their life. But what about Bhante for normal lay people or even Bhantes or even monastics not in that kind of stream entry?
Yeah.
Is that considered?
Yeah, actually, we as monks, we can't encourage death, and we can't promote death, even when they are in utter kind of pain. So euthanasia, as you have mentioned, as monks, we can't encourage, because there are situations during the Buddha's time, say for example, certain people are suffering. So at that time, one monk approach them and he see that this person is suffering, and then he is asking this from his relatives. So this person is suffering, why don't you make him free from suffering by sort of, as you mentioned, going through this euthanasia. So let him die quickly. So I'll just give this so that he will quickly die. So then he commit parajika. So the monk commit parajika. So therefore, these are very tricky points, because the ending another person's life is out of our business. So therefore, as monks, from the Buddhist point of view, we can't encourage death, even the person when he is going through suffering. So therefore it is a little tricky. But on the other hand, when consider the arahants, that is a different situation. Because arahants, they are not going through the normal death. Now, when consider normal person, so his death is not a real death, he is going to be reborn. But when consider an arahant, that is his last death. So therefore he can commit suicide if he likes. I mean, if he is going through some severe suffering and if he understands that he is not going to recover and it is he has become a burden to the others and life is getting more and more difficult and he has completed his task, he is an arahant, then of course he can, end his life. That is a different, that is an entirely different situation, by the way. Because he has completely uprooted the self-view, so there is no any kind of committing suicide as a layperson. Now, when we are committing suicide, so we feel that I am an individual, I am killing myself. But in contrary, when it comes to the arahants, so they may not feel that I am a person, I am an individual. So he may see that this is a continuation of five aggregates. Now it has come to an end. So let's conclude this. Let's wind it up. So therefore, it's just two scenarios actually.
So Bhante, let's say for a terminally ill person who is making the decision independently on the person by itself, how will the Buddhism?
That is up to him. So that is up to him. It is not encouraged by another monk or another person, but he himself taking the decision. He himself taking the decision, okay, due to various reasons. Okay, I am going through severe suffering, so my family is spending so much of money on behalf of me, and say my attendants are really going through some hard time, and I am also not experiencing some quality life. So with that, so you can come to a kind of a conclusion. But on the other hand, actually these are very difficult to give a definite answer, because you know, actually certain instances has happened even during the Buddha's time, as you mentioned Channovada Sutta. So in the Channovada Sutta, Venerable Channa, actually he decided to commit suicide before he became an arahant, and the message has passed, and then Venerable Ananda and Venerable Sariputta approached him and request not to do it. And Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Chunda. Venerable Chunda. Now, at the end, Venerable Chunda made a very sophisticated, important discourse about the Buddha's teaching. So that actually makes a complete difference or complete distinction in Channa's mind. So he was able to attain arahantship after hearing that teaching. So then he committed suicide. So after Venerable Sariputta reported the Buddha that we preached Dhamma, but I heard that Venerable Channa committed suicide, then Buddha mentioned he made a blameless death. So that indicates he has committed suicide after becoming an arahant.
Okay.
Yeah. So therefore, individually one can take a decision, not promoted by another person. And on the other hand, due to other various reasons, say you are having kind of a breakup with the family and you encounter some problem and therefore you commit suicide. So that is not encouraged, by the way. So committing suicide is always discouraged, because Buddha really highlighted the value of human life.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante. Yes, it's more for the terminally ill, I think. I was thinking, because I think like it's more and more in the discussions and in the open discussions in today's world. That's
yes. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bhante, I have a written question here.
Yeah.
It's more in the form of a statement, and I think it's looking for Bhante's thoughts and comments. Dear Bhante, if I occupy my mind with thoughts of metta and or mindfully doing daily activities, sometimes in the midst there are thoughts of dispassion due to the repeated activities to support my daily life, and then I have thoughts of renunciation.
Yeah. Actually, we need to carefully recognize, I mean, are these really dispassion, or are these really kind of resentment? Because you know, I have to do a lot of things today, I have to wash clothes, I have to take care of my children, I have to sweep the floor, I have to take care of the garden, I have to go for shopping, this and that and this. So all so many things are there, let me ordain. So this is a kind of a situation can happen in the mind, because you are fed up with so much of activities, and it can have a kind of a dispassion. So this is not the real dispassion that we are talking here. The dispassion what we are talking here is more like coming through the practice. So you recognize the characteristics of phenomena. You recognize how quickly they arising and passing away, how impermanent they are, how unsatisfactory they are, and how non-governable they are, out of my control they are. So that leads to dispassion. So therefore, the normal mundane type of dispassion that we are talking, what we feel kind of frustrated, is not the dispassion that we are talking here. And therefore, as lay people, say we have some amount of burden, some amount of suffering. As monks also, we have some amount of suffering. So actually, very beautifully mentioned by Achan Cha. So he mentioned, so as a lay person, you have lay person suffering. And assume that you become a monk. And now you are a samanera, novice monk. And then he mentioned, as a novice monk, you have novice monk suffering. And then assume that you become a young bhikkhu, high ordained young bhikkhu. Thinking now I want to get rid of this novice monk suffering, I want to become high ordained. Then actually you have high ordained monk suffering. You are a navaka, you are a newly high ordained monk, so you have his suffering. And after 5 vassa, now you are becoming a majjhima, middling kind of monk, and you have his suffering. And now you are a thera, you are becoming more than 10 vassa, now you are a thera, and you have a thera's suffering. And then you are more than 20 vassa, you are a mahathera, and you have a mahathera's suffering. So therefore, this kind of situations are available in ourselves. So I mean, it is not that we are kind to escape from these things. The point is, when we are going through this, how to maintain mind free from suffering. So physical suffering going to be available. So various sufferings coming through illnesses, changes, climate changes, political situations, inflation, so many things going to be available. And but how are we go through them while keeping the mind pleasant, while keeping the mind relaxed, while keeping the mind free from suffering? So therefore, we can never have a kind of a physical world which is free from suffering. And only thing is, we can have an internally developed mind which is not associating suffering, which is bearing things, which is capable of non-grasping. So there is one occasion when this Nakula Pitu, the father of the Nakula, approached the Buddha, and he mentioned, "Bante, I am so old now. My body is very much like a old ridden cart. There are so much of frictions, so much of internal suffering I am going through. I am going through a lot of sicknesses. So, and this body is very much like a nest of sicknesses, illnesses." Then Buddha mentioned, "Yes, of course, this body is very much like a nest of sicknesses, nest of, say, illnesses. But let us keep the mind free from illness. Let us keep the mind free from mental illness." So that is Buddha's sort of direction. Yeah. It is not easy, by the way. I mean, it is not easy. So that is why, I mean, we are discussing so much different kinds of suttas, how to achieve it. So how Buddha encourages to do it, what are the methods that he has explained to achieve it. That is why it is becoming so more and more practical way of developing it.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, the text says internal and external. The Buddha says we have to do it in come to the voidness through internal and external methods. Right? Is that right?
Yes.
I understand that correctly.
Yeah, many methods are. Yeah, actually, many methods are there. You can have a mixture as well. You can simply use internal, and you can achieve it. You can simply use external, you can achieve it. Or you can have a mixture of both, and you can achieve it.
Now, you have explained to us, or the way I understood, looking internally, we look at our five aggregates, and we can choose what we want, whatever comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Nama Rupa, when you spoke about the feelings, or we can look at the Nama Rupa. So my question is, while we are looking at this arising and passing away, or you know, whatever we are looking at, after a while it just sort of we realize the impermanence that is there. Then we sort of come to a state of steadiness or sort of a non-movement. Would that be right if I said that?
Yeah. I mean, it happens when you release everything. Because you understand the arising and passing away nature, vulnerable nature of all conditioned phenomena, and then mind let go of the whole thing, releases all thing, and then mind becomes steady.
Yeah, because then what we are looking at is say feelings, because you do feelings quite often. You see this sort of arising and passing away, and these waves of feelings coming and going, and then after a while it just comes to us. There's no rising and passing away, it just becomes steady.
Correct.
Yes.
So
then you just be in that.
Yes.
And last time you said it is just like this, I put it in my way, like the body rests when you sit down, the mind is now resting.
Correct.
It's not moving.
Correct.
It's just there.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Yes. That's thank you. And the other one I want to ask you, if it's okay, is that you spoke about those prasakata you spoke about, and you started saying it, you know, the appichitta.
Appichakata, yeah. Yeah. Appichakata.
Mind, is it okay if you can just tell me the thing? So I like to write that down, because I think that's quite nice to know it in the language as well, yeah, the language.
Yeah, so
it's
actually
Sinhala, or is this Pali that you are?
Yeah, appichakata dosa actually Pali. So basically there are 10 types of topics Buddha recommend. Appichakata is having less, wanting little.
Yes.
Then santuttikata. Santuttikata.
Contentment,
yes. And then Paviveka Katha is having seclusion.
Solitude,
yeah. Paviveka Katha, yes.
Pavi,
Yes, paviveka katha. Then,
and then the fourth one is
asansagda katha. So you are not socializing in a way.
Not socializing.
Asansagda.
Not socializing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then vidyarambha katha. That is that you are arousing energy to the practice.
Vidyarambha.
Yeah. Vidyarambha katha. Yes, Pali, Pali, Pali.
Yes, okay. Vidi, it sounds single,
also. Viriyarambha. Yeah, Viriyarambha Katha, yes.
Yeah.
And then Sila Katha, of course, the morality, talking
yeah.
about morality.
Yeah.
Samadhi Katha,
yeah.
about concentration.
Yeah.
Panya,
yeah.
Panya Katha, about wisdom.
Yeah.
Vimutti Katha, the discussions
yeah.
about the freedom or deliverance.
Yes.
And Vimutti Jnana Dasana Katha. Is knowledge and wisdom, or sort of knowledge and vision on deliverance.
Yes, yes, yes. Got it, Bhante. Now, this is what, anyway, the even he, this was the advice to Meghya Asana Bhante when his mind was not immature and he was having these all these thoughts of distraction when he went and sat in the
correct
beautiful mango grove.
Yeah, yeah,
so
actually.
This is what,
Buddha mentioned. So actually Buddha repeatedly mentioned about these 10 subjects. So
yes.
whenever, now he mentioned to monks, whenever
yes.
you gather, either maintain silence, noble silence, or either engage with discussion on these 10 topics.
Yes. So I think this is what he's telling us to do as well. No, but I mean, we are lay people and we are all the time having this you know, frivolous talk because that is the lay life, you know.
Yeah.
But what the Buddha is encouraging us to, at least at some time, even for a short period of time, to try to do this talk with our Dhamma friends, with the
correct.
Kalyana Mitra.
Yes. 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 Exactly.
Because if we do this continuously, then that's what he talks about, the two thoughts. Types of thought, that which we are thinking constantly is who we are.
What? The last term?
The two distracting thoughts, Mante, in his sutta, he said that which we are constantly thinking
mm-hmm.
actually then makes who this who we are in a way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We become that.
Yes.
Constantly do this positive talk and, you know, take completely stop the thinking and the thoughts and the actions of unwholesome, then we become the wholesome.
Exactly.
Right, Bhante?
Exactly. Exactly.
So that is what he's encouraging us to practice in our own way. Obviously, we can't do it like the monks and nuns because we are lay people, but we can try a little bit even.
Exactly. Some very correct.
Yes, Bhante. So thank you for that. That's
Dota
Mandak, is my question.
Okay,
you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you, Dante. And I believe Kumudini has one more question.
Yeah.
Bhante, just a quick question relating to the euthanasia question that the other gentleman asked you.
Mm-hmm.
When lay people who are suffering terminally ill and everything, they make the decision to euthanize, but what is the karmic repercussion for that individual?
Very difficult to answer. Yeah, very difficult to answer. I mean, it's very difficult in the sense, I mean, if he has anger towards his life, if he has anger towards the current situation, so it can be detrimental because he want to get rid of, so he is sort of having a resentment towards the present situation, so therefore he is ending his life out of anger.
It is a very
very tricky point.
Difficult
question. Exactly. So we need to know the exact mentality of that person, or is he having kind of a compassion towards the others? So because I am spending a kind of a lower quality life, no point, I am just continuing, others are really suffering and this and that. So has a kind of a real compassion. So I mean, very difficult to answer this question because it depends on the person's mentality.
Bhante, what I thought was, if you refuse life prolonging treatments like oxygen and this and that, that is not committing suicide in the way of as it is termed, euthanasia. You are just discontinuing treatment. That is okay, but you know, euthanasia is where you are given something to end your life.
So
I thought that was not good.
No, that's the thing.
I agree.
No, actually, that is the thing. The point is. Now, the point is, now we are, the person is trying to end his life thinking that he is going through a lot of suffering. Now, how about next life? If he is reborn in a hell realm, is he going to be spending a happy life there?
No, we are saying, if he was having those bad thoughts because he's suffering.
Yes.
What you're saying.
Yeah. Now the point is, now comparatively we think, okay, I am suffering, I am going through a lot of suffering, so therefore let me end my life. Now he has kind of a resentment towards the present situation. But assume that he is not a person, he is not a virtuous person, he didn't do a lot of wholesome deeds, so therefore there is no much merit power. So at the end of this life, assume that he is reborn in a hell realm. So the suffering he may go through there is more severe than the suffering he is going through at the present moment. So therefore we are seeing only a very narrow picture when we are considering this situation. But on the other hand, if we consider the big picture, we don't know what would be the next life, because we presume that we may get a better life, less suffering life after this present life, which I am going through a lot of suffering. So this is a kind of presumption. So we don't know exactly whether that is true.
Yeah, the better thing is for nature to take its course. You can refuse treatment, but you just let yourself, you know, one can't live forever because with medical treatment in the West, they can keep you hanging on a thread forever. You can refuse such treatment. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, I can understand, but very tricky point to answer.
Yes. Yeah, because they now, you know, have to write before they become ill. It is called a living will, where you stipulate that you don't want all these wires and force feeding and everything done to you when you are terminal.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, they are obliged to keep you alive.
Ah.
The doctor. So that's my what I'm really worried about, and I have signed such an order. That
really?
Not be for me.
Uh-huh.
So that's it, isn't it, Bhante? Because I don't want to euthanize, because I know it is not good karma for me.
Uh-huh.
But I can do treatment.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you pay, Bhante?
No, actually.
I'm just saying.
So,
treatment that just,
no, actually,
you know, extend my life quality.
Yeah, no, basically that is the individual's idea. So I don't want to generalize things. So I mean, we have some amount of our personal views, our personal preferences. So giving a kind of a generalized idea, I don't like.
I see that. Okay. Then, you know, it's a really slippery slope.
Correct. Exactly. Yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I think we have come to the conclusion of today's program. Thank you very much for interesting questions. And again, we were discussing some deep aspects of the spiritual practice and some strong advices given by the Buddha. And by going through these reflective thoughts and going through these sutta teachings, we were able to arouse some energy in ourselves, have some desire on the practice, and to encourage ourselves and again develop some amount of wisdom. So through this, we are able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the beings, all the past away relatives, all the celestial beings. And let's wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.